Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, John, tell us about the story that you chose for today.
I picked a story called The Destructors by Graham Greene. What did you do it for? Blackie asked. He was just. He had no jealousy. He was anxious to retain T in the gang if he could. It was the word beautiful that worried him. That belonged to a class world that you could still see parodied at the Wormsley Common Empire by a man wearing a top hat and a monocle with a haw-haw accent. He was tempted to say, "My dear Trevor, old chap," and unleashed his hellhounds. "If you'd broken in," he said sadly, "that indeed would have been an exploit worthy of the gang." "This was better," T said. "I found out things." He continued to stare at his feet, not meeting anybody's eye, as though he were absorbed in some dream he was unwilling or ashamed to share. "What things?" "Old Misery's going to be away all tomorrow and bank holiday," Blackie said with relief. "You mean we could break in? And pinch things?" somebody asked. Blackie said, "Nobody's going to pinch things. Breaking in, that's good enough, isn't it? We don't want any court stuff." "I don't want to pinch anything," T said. "I've got a better idea." "What is it?" T raised his eyes, as gray and disturbed as the drab August day. "We'll pull it down," he said. "We'll destroy it." Blackie gave a single hoot of laughter and then, like Mike, fell quiet, daunted by the serious, implacable gaze. "What did the police be doing all the time?" he said. "They'd never know. We do it from inside. I found a way in," he said with a sort of intensity. "We'd be like worms, don't you see, in an apple. When we came out again, there'd be nothing there. No staircase, no panels, nothing but just walls. And then we'd make the walls fall down somehow." "We'd go to Jug," Blackie said. "Who's to prove? And anyway, we wouldn't have pinched anything," he added without the smallest flicker of glee. "There wouldn't be anything to pinch after we'd finished." "I've never heard of going to prison for breaking things," Summers said. "There wouldn't be time," Blackie said. "I've seen housebreakers at work." "There are 12 of us," T said. "We'd organize. None of us know how." "I know," T said. He looked across at Blackie. "Have you got a better plan?" "Today," Mike said tactlessly, "we're pinching free rides." "Free rides," T said. "You can stand down. Blackie, if you'd rather." "The gang's got to vote." "Put it up then," Blackie said uneasily. "It's proposed that tomorrow and Monday we destroy old Misery's house." "Hear, hear," said a fat boy called Joe. "Who's in favor?" T said, "It's carried." "How do we start?" Summers said. "He'll tell you," Blackie said. It was the end of his leadership. He went away to the back of the car park and began to kick a stone, dribbling it this way and that. There was only one old Morris in the park, for few cars were left there except lorries. Without an attendant, there was no safety. He took a flying kick at the car and scraped a little paint off the rear mudguard. Beyond, paying no more attention to him than a stranger, the gang had gathered round T. Blackie was dimly aware of the fickleness of favor. He thought of going home, of never returning, of letting them all discover the hollowness of T's leadership. But suppose, after all, what T proposed was possible. Nothing like it had ever been done before. The fame of the Wormsley Common car park gang would surely reach around London. There would be headlines in the papers. Even the grown-up gangs who ran the betting at the All In Wrestling and the Barrow Boys would hear with respect of how old Misery's house had been destroyed. Driven by the pure, simple, and altruistic ambition of fame for the gang, Blackie came back to where T stood in the shadow of Misery's wall.
How did you find this one?
I was reading Graham Greene's The Power and the Glory, and I thought, I want to do a Graham Greene story for the podcast because I was reading that book and I was like, yeah. So I just started searching for it and came up as one of his best stories. And I was like, oh, and here it is online. So I'll take a look. And that was it. I read it and then I sent it over.
This was such a. I was like so anxious reading this story because I was like, these kids are gonna get in trouble. Like, this is a bad idea, you know? And I felt like they just like went into it blindly, just kind of saying like, okay, well, we can destroy the house for sure, like just as long as we don't go to court. I'm like, you guys, maybe you've never seen someone go to court for destroying a house, but you can. They're just like worried about
Yeah.
like stealing little trinkets and stuff out of it instead of like, you know, nothing's gonna come of it if they just destroy the whole thing.
No, they're all kids, right? They're just like,
Yeah, but you could tell that they're like the kind of kids that run this little neighborhood, right?
yeah,
Like,
they're a little gang, right?
yeah, whether or not they're like doing bad stuff all the time, like they're getting into shit all the time together. So I was like,
It's so funny because
no.
it's like they're like a gang trying to do illegal things without getting in too much trouble. And yet, like, he's like, I gotta go home to have lunch with my
I
mom.
know. I thought that was such an interesting little tidbit of that whole scene was like, yeah, like everyone's like bringing sandwiches and they're like, but but so and so had to go home. And that was it. I thought that there, like, something was going to come of that, you know, but yeah, nothing did. I thought like he was going to get busted on the way to her back, to her
He was the
prom.
youngest one, because it said right at the beginning, was he like, he was 9. Mike was 9, so he still had to go home and eat with his mom and go to
Right.
school and everything.
Yeah.
The other kids are already delinquents.
Yeah, nobody cares about the other kids anymore. Yeah, so I had this like sense of dread. And then I thought for sure that it would be a story about how they get caught, because how could you not get caught, you know? So it was fun to see that they actually get away with it almost exactly the way they describe they're going to, which all sounds like it makes some sense if you're like building blocks. They're like, we're gonna gut the whole house, no one will know, and then we'll just topple the walls. What? And it works. And my only gripe with it, because I felt like all these kids were like real, and it was even kind of believable the way they operate as this little gang where they have this power struggle at the beginning, right? You read the section where Blackie's like a little worried because you can tell that he's losing his grip and it's not his idea, but then he kind of steps back. And then even he's surprised. I think it's through his point of view at that point that, like, when he goes to the house the next day, he's like running late because he had done his part, and he's like surprised to see that everyone's like head down, like working. I thought all that kind of stuff was really fun. So I liked the story about this like group of kids. I think we've talked about other stories like that in the past where like maybe it was like Girls at Play, where it's like a story about a collective group versus, and this is not told like we, it's not that point of view, but you know, it's not one character's story. And so my only gripe with it, I wonder what you think, was how like at the end we didn't get to celebrate alongside the kids. It like the point of view shifts and we watch the house fall down through Misery's eyes, but not so much his eyes as like his driver's eyes. His driver is like, oh, that was wild.
Well, that's an interesting question or point, because one of the things about the story is it's very British, right? And then one thing about Britain, about these kids, is like the question of class, of like where they
Yeah.
come from, right? And you know, we don't have, it's not as much of a thing in America, in the United States, as it is there. So it's kind of hard to get the nuances as an American reader. But it's right, it is in there. Like T's idea is kind of he's depicted as being from that class. Like, and he's destroying something that is of his. So I think the fact that he's successful is the celebration, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be nice to see them stand back, like, you know, the end of the movie, and be like off to the side and seeing it all collapse, and they're like giving each other pats on the
Yes.
back and everything.
It would feel like winning, like the underdogs winning a baseball game. Like it would feel like that, like innocent level of success. They wouldn't be like, oh, hell yeah, we got him. It'd be more kind of like, I can't believe we did it. And maybe they all go on to have successful careers in like
Like the credit scene where it's like so and so wound up working in a brokerage. This, or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like they learn some really good stuff about themselves and leadership and sticking to a plan and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, like because I liked all that energy of it because they could be doing something non-criminal and it would still be as
It's like Stand
exciting.
By Me or something.
Yeah, it still feels that exciting. I love stories like that. Stand By Me is a great example of just like a young band of kids and like the little power struggles and how you can see that they're all like probably good people at heart, even though they're doing this weird childlike thing at this moment. So you're rooting for them even though they're doing something bad, right? Because they're innocent. But yeah, it kind of like zooms out and then it's like maybe to your point about like the class system being so prevalent, you know, and like maybe like top of mind is maybe we are supposed to enjoy this like last scene a little bit differently because
The lorry driver, right? With,
yeah,
yeah,
he's the
old
one that
Misery.
he's it like describes that's how it ends. It describes how he's trying not to laugh and he's like,
Yeah, but he
okay, but you
can't.
got yeah, he's like, but you got it and it's kind of funny. And that's like how it ends. And like it is kind of, I don't know. My modern sensibility when it comes to writing was like, no, I want to see the kids. I want to see the kids like celebrating, but it is kind of like maybe even British in that sort of flippant way, right? Where they're like, huh.
It's like a culmination of what Blackie says in the part I read, where he's like, this is, he doesn't say it, but he's thinking it. He's like, this would be legendary. We would have accomplished something that people would be talking about. And so this lorry driver is like, he's the one who pulled the rope that made it all fall. And he's like, man, that was good. I'm going to
Yeah.
tell my mates about this.
Yeah, it was cool. I liked how it got into it really quickly. I just really wasn't sure where the story was going when it kind of started out. I thought it was maybe going to be a story about just the dynamics of this group, because the kids are kind of bullshitting for a while at the beginning there before they say that this is what they're going to commit to and do.
I mean, it is about those dynamics in as much as those dynamics reflect the class system, right?
Yeah.
He goes by T because apparently the name Trevor is indicative of something.
Embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what a great moment when the one kid calls him Trevor, trying to like undermine him.
Yeah.
And Blackie steps in. He's like, no, like T is doing something here. We got to see this through. So one of the things that when I was thinking about when I was reading this is I've been thinking about a lot lately. It was like, why do people read stories? Like, what keeps them going in a story? You know, because this is one of the things that I want to learn to recognize it and to be able to produce it. And that's the point of the podcast, right? So, you know, when you first start reading a story, you have to want to read a story because you don't know anything. But then once you get going, like, what keeps you going? And, you know, this story does a great job. It introduces the kids, it introduces the class dynamic in a kind of a subtle way. As it's introducing the kids, you can see the class dynamics playing out in them. And then it's also introducing the gang dynamics, like what's going on
Right.
between them all. And then it brings up T's plan. And then that's what starts it off, more or less, right? That's a few pages in, but that's like the main action is like, we're going to do this thing and it's going to be legendary. And that's like, once you've gotten to that point, like you're going to read the rest of it. You're like, are they going to
Right.
do it?
Yeah.
Is it going to happen? Are they going to accomplish it? What's going to come up? What's going to happen? And like everything that happens after that is little like tightening the screws on that idea of like of that question of are they going to be able to do it? They start demolishing and everything seems to go on. But then old Misery's coming home early. Oh, what are they going to do? He wants to get in the house. They trick him. They wind up locking this guy up in his
Like
outhouse basically.
bathroom. Yeah.
Out in the yard. And that's like, so that's increasing that. That's turning the screws even tighter. You know, everything that happens, it's still on the same, like where we started from. It's like, are they going to be able to do it? Are they going to be able to do it? But they're tightening the screws on that question the whole way through. And I don't know. That's what I noticed about this as I was reading it, is just how each moment kind of built on that.
Yeah, there are a couple times when you're not sure if they're gonna do it correctly. Not just like not get away with it, but like not be able to actually topple the house the way they thought that they would.
Yeah, and the infighting even that comes up, like we were talking about when he's about to call him Trevor, that would have made the whole thing fall apart. Or the gang
Yeah,
fall apart, not the
not the
house.
house.
And they wouldn't have been able to accomplish it. So those little things even come up, like the gang dynamics, the class dynamics, like
Right.
are going to get in the way of this project. And that's why we read at a certain point, right? To go back to what my thought was, is we want to see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're going to get in their own way, whether or not they're going to stay together and be able to carry this out, whether T is going to be able to keep his kind of strange dignity that he gains with this idea.
Right. It was interesting too, because like you said, T is of the class of Old Misery, whose house this is when he decides to destroy it. And he's also, when he introduces the idea, it's after the section you read, it's after he's been given a private tour of the home. He even like has like a discussion with a solid like back and forth discussion at the end there, where the guy's like, I told you guys could like come into the house just like not uninvited and don't jump over my fence or whatever. Like he's trying, like the Old Misery, like he maybe he's like lying at this point, but like he's not like the villain in the sense that he's actually been bad to these boys. Like he's just like,
He gave him Smarties. He's
yeah,
handing
he's
out
just
candy.
the unfortunate face of like what it is they're fighting against, you know? Like, unfortunately, he's just the target, but like he seems like he's been decent to these guys and doesn't really mind that they're around, and also probably on some level trusts them if he showed the one his place and then will go and leave for several days at a time. So that was kind of like unfortunate too for him. Not that I like feel any kind of like, I don't feel anything for this Old Misery, but it was interesting that there wasn't like a clear villain on the page, right? It was an idea that,
That is a good point, yeah.
because I didn't feel any kind of I think part of my overwhelming dread at the beginning here when they decided to do that, I was like, no, I was like, don't get in trouble. That's a bad idea. I was thinking to myself, like, also, what did this guy do? Like, I'm not totally clear. What did this guy do? You know, like, why are we picking his house? It just wasn't one of those stories where you're like rooting against the villain too.
Yeah, my tension didn't feel like there was a villain either. It came more from whether or not T would be able to hold it together, like hold the gang
Yes.
together to see it through. It's like,
Yeah.
because there was, you know, they went along with it, but those moments when it was thing like he showed any kind of hesitancy or any kind of doubt, the kids were ready to jump on him. And that was like, is he going to be able to keep this together? That was the source of the tension for me. So the villain in that sense is this abstract concept of like leadership or like keeping the gang together, not so much in a person. I mean, although Blackie kind of filled that role because of being the previous leader. And so his support of T during it was like a great moment of like, oh yeah, Blackie's on board too.
It's like what could also make this fall apart is like, when you come up with something and you know that you're having your own second thoughts, but you just don't want to show weakness. And we never see any hint of that with T. He doesn't ever like say like, I don't think this is a good idea, or he doesn't ever like try to back out of it.
I was thinking about this story in terms of the story we did. I think it was the last episode, Button Button, with the once you introduce the button, somebody's got to push it, right? Like, we got to find out what happens. When T has the idea, we're going to demolish this house. It's like, oh, I got to see that. That's got to happen, right? And of course, roadblocks come up, old Misery coming home and like the gang turning against him briefly and all these things. It's like, oh, we got to see the house like to get demolished. Like, this has to happen, right? How are they going to do it? It's one of those inevitabilities. Like, if you're going to introduce something like that into your story, you got to see it through. Because I was writing a story a long time ago. I brought it to the workshop. This will be like 5 years ago. And it had 9/11 in it. And like the wife went off to 9/11 and went off to 9/11. The wife was in New York when 9/11 happened. And
Jesus.
like the whole story is like, did she survive and all this stuff? And I originally wrote it where she did. She was going to come home. And that was the end of the story. And I was thinking about this like tension idea. Like, how do you turn up the tension on a story and like keep the interest going, turning the screws, like I said before? And I was like, I should make her die. That's how it should happen. She needs to die. Like, I introduced these things in the beginning. It's like, why did I should have seen him through? So I rewrote it and made her die and like extended it a little bit. And I don't know if it works, but we'll see. But that was like one of the things I was just thinking about recently is like turning those screws and keeping the tension. It's like once you introduce the thing at the beginning, like that's what's driving the reader's interest. That's what's driving the story. You got to keep it going. You got to keep punching it up.
Yeah, I think it's there's probably something to be said in that formula for like whatever idea you introduce being interesting enough on its face, right? It's not just about like introducing something and then it inevitably happens, because we can probably think of stories where that is boring. But there's probably like a certain level of plot where, maybe it's like when you introduce something that's like a negative outcome that makes that tension versus like, sure, I'm excited enough to read. Like every romance movie that is introduced as like, we broke up, here's how it happened. You know they break up, but you don't really want to watch the story if they introduced it and said, we live happily ever after. It's like you do want to read the like the negative ending. I wonder if there's something that's like has to do with like morbid curiosity, or if it's actually like a storytelling mechanism,
I mean, this story ends with the house being destroyed. I think you could tell a different, like, we talk about the inevitability, but surprisingness. There could be a way to undermine the inevitability. Like Button Button, she pushes the button. In this story, they do demolish the house. But if you found a really like a something that was equally inevitable, something that we didn't see at the beginning that would surprise us at the end, it's inevitable that we arrive at this other place, even though we want to arrive at this other thing. But that other place is surprise, that's satisfying too.
The emotional thing can happen, but I guess I mean like if you introduce the button, like you said, it has to get pushed. And that's like kind of a bad thing. It has like
Oh, because someone's gonna die.
You know what I mean? Like the house has to get destroyed, even if the ending is a little bit different. What if the story was like, this is how I lost my dog but found it? That's not as exciting. You know what I mean? Like, not that these stories are being introduced that explicitly. It's not like this is how we destroyed a house, but it's like, should we destroy the house? You're reading because you really hope they do. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a happy ending story. There's none of those. I hate them in general. But I wonder if like I've ever like read a story like knowing that it ends in a good way and still having any like type of tension.
I
Because
mean,
okay, so I think about this in news stories a lot too, right? Where it's like maybe it's like one of those dodo videos or something, and someone's like, "Oh my God, my dog and I were hiking. The dog fell down the mountain." But they're telling the story with their dog dog right next to them. So I know that the dog lives, right? Maybe I'm excited to like kind of read this treacherous tale and see how they did it. But I don't know that that would work necessarily for like stories, right? I don't know if it works to like have like the happy ending. Like something bad, bad, bad has to happen, and it has to happen all the way through. I think it's like your 9/11 thing. 9/11 was bad and it happened, but the outcome also has to be bad. She has to die.
I don't know that they have to. I think it might work better for the story I was telling that that happened, because I wasn't telling a story about her. It was about him at home and what was going on with him. And so her not coming home ever is more revealing of him. It like escalates his story, because her coming home is kind of like a return to normal, whereas I felt like the story needed to veer away. Like it had to like redefine his entire situation. The classic every romance story is they meet, they like each other, there's a problem, there might break up, it's not going to work out. Oh, but it does. And they get together at the end. And so there's the happy ending. But that problem in the middle is the Coleridge thing, suspension of disbelief. You know it, why it's happening. Like if you take yourself out of the story for a minute, you're like, of course they're going to get together at the end. This is a stupid problem that the writer had to introduce to make it an interesting story. But you kind of put that aside just to enjoy the story. That's kind of like the turning of the screws in the middle of the story, but you still know that it's going to work out at the end. It might be the happy version of it. I don't know. This story, though, with the house, because it had all the class stuff that's wrapped up in it, and like the lorry driver at the end laughing at it, you know, like I didn't want to see the house destroyed.
No.
Just reading it, because I was like, I have an attachment to it. But the story is celebrating that at the end. So there's this kind of like, there's something just cringing about just like destroying something, and you want to like pull back from it. So there's that tension too, because you're cheering it on at the same time. You're like, oh, you're destroying this. Like,
I know, that's how I felt. I was like, no.
and it's like one of the only houses that has just survived the Blitz, right? Blew up everything else except left this one house, and they're gonna come in and destroy it now. Like, you're like,
Why?
oh, why do that? But you're celebrating it at the end.
I wonder like what the fallout is, because at this point, like you could argue that old Misery knows exactly who did this.
Oh, yeah.
So like what happened? I'm like, do they really get away with it?
Did Graham Greene ever write the sequel?
I know, I like, yeah, when you do flash forward, it's not that they're all successful bankers, they're all in prison still.
That's right.
They're all tried as adults. So is that kind of your takeaway then, though? Like the idea of like how you can ratchet the tension, like you said, like turning the screws, and how this is kind of done that way.
Yeah, I guess turning the screws is a metaphor for tension. I didn't want to think of it as tension exactly. And I didn't want to, like, everyone always, when they talk about storytelling and stuff, they always talk about conflict. And I remember hearing something recently. It was like, conflict is only one possible manifestation of the thing that is the story that like drives a story. And like John Gardner called it profluence. It was like this, which is all that means is m forward momentum, moving forward. But what creates that forward momentum? What creates the pushing the reader through the story? We talk about it being conflict. We talk about it being tension. We talk about it being interest. You know, what is the reader's interest? But whatever that is, like, I think it has to do with upping the stakes, like just keep increasing something. Like you introduce something at the beginning of the story, whatever it is. And this story does such a great job of doing that. Like we get tea, we get the house, we get the gang, the dynamics of the gang. The house is introduced as this thing. We can see like the social relationships, the class issues, and then tea springs on us. Let's destroy it. And we're like, what? I didn't see that coming. I mean, maybe the title would tip you off, but you don't pay that close attention to titles, do we? So it just comes out of nowhere. And then you're invested, then you're there, and that's what's carrying you through. So, yeah, just thinking about what I can learn from stories as far as keeping us going as a reader has been, that's my takeaway from this story, is like, that's what this story did.
So it's not always tension, but like you said, like what keeps a reader interested, and like a lot of it sounds like is those expectations at the beginning, but then
Yeah. Like, there's no, who knows why people read a story? Like, when you start reading a story, like, you're given, like, I have to read it for a podcast. I need to find a story.
Oh,
Or
I know. I think about this all the
you're
time.
in school, you know, teacher signs it to you. But, like, just who picks up a book and starts reading it? They have an interest. They want to read your story. And then they start, how do you make sure they finish, right? You start introducing things, and then you got to do something with those things. And those the thing you do with those things has to be interesting. It has to be something that keeps the reader going. And so what is that?
So to your point about like not everything needing to end negatively, then maybe it is just more about like the expectation. That's an easier way to think about it. Like not every like just because I was saying like not every story like ends happily.
Yeah.
Like you're still like introducing expectations for a conflict, even if it gets resolved. That's still an expectation and that's still like a type of tension, like momentum maybe.
Yeah, momentum might be a good way to think of it. It's like the inclined plane experiments, right? Where you put the thing at the top and it's at rest, but when you let go of it, it just slowly starts to roll because gravity's acting on it. It's accelerating it, like speeding up, and you got to speed it up as you go through it. You got to add momentum. You have to Newton's laws, inertial mass, inertia.
That's all I think about when I write.
Yeah.
I feel like my only takeaway, I didn't really like think too hard about this one. I just like liked it, but I've probably said it before too, but I personally just have a soft spot for these types of stories about like kids in this stage of life and small groups of like boys. They're so cute. And when they do these like things together, you know, like Stand By Me, finding a body is like the defining moment of their youth, you know, and destroying this house, I imagine, becomes the defining moment of their youth. But all the things that lead up to it and happen afterwards are probably like very similar for all boys, right? If you have this group of friends, there's like something that like is the turning point for you at that age. So my takeaway would be if there are so many stories like this, Stephen King writing half of them and the rest being movies about baseball, why
Some
not?
sports movie.
Yeah, like why not capitalize on it? Why not write your own short story about like a little group of kids?
That's a good idea. I should write a story about that.
I feel like we could all probably do it pretty well. And when we talk about things like write what you know, I don't think that it would be very hard for any of us to come up with some almost direct version of whatever it is we grew up with, right? And stories like that, if they're of a certain time period, right, 80s, 90s, are so easily kind of like informed by what we already know about that time. It's like World War II stories. If you tell me I'm in the Midwest suburb in 1995, like I am filling in every other blank. And then you can just tell your story. There's not like all this like world building that needs to take place. All right. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NaplesWritersWorkshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.